Limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees is more feasible than you think. We just need to go beyond for sustainability, accelerating the energy transition, deploying green tech at scale, decarbonizing entire value chains, and leave no one behind. Welcome to Beyond the Scope, a sustainability podcast that goes beyond the obvious in support of positive and collective climate action.
Hello, Happy New Year. My name is Sumit Bose, and this is the first episode of Beyond the Scope, a podcast launched by Schneider Electric to talk about what's happening in terms of sustainability, ambitions around it, net zero, and of course, the future of our planet. My background is that I run something called futurenetzero.com. I've been in the energy space for about 11 years, and I'm a journalist of 30 years, which is terrifying. And I've really seen over the last kind of 10, 15 years, how the world has changed in terms of what it looks like in terms of the environment. When I started at the BBC in 1993, there was no environment correspondent. There's not a single publication on the planet that doesn't have one now. It is a time, I think, where the world is finally coming together to look at this. And I think it's a very opportune moment for Schneider Electric to explore that. And that's what we'll be doing in this series of podcasts. So let me just introduce our first two guests who will take you through a little bit about where they're from and their company, but then we'll get into our conversation around this whole topic of what happens in the future. So Vincent Petit, could I ask you to say hello to the audience and explain who you are and what your role is at Schneider?
Hello to you. Hello to everyone in the audience. Pleasure to be here. Schneider Electric is a technology company. It's a pretty big company. I mean, present in over 100 countries. It's a company that's been around a long time because it actually is over 180 years old. So there have been several technology disruptions, obviously, over this time. And we're really focused on two types of technologies, energy management and electrification on one side, and digital technologies on the other side. The purpose of, you know, those two technologies for us is really to improve the efficiency in the way we use energy resources and overall improve the sustainability journey of our consumer. That's what we've been doing for a long time, and we're quite passionate about this. And I'm currently in charge of running our Sustainability Research Institute, which is really looking at trying to shed light on some of those big problems around climate change, trying to understand what are the ways to get around it.
People have heard of, you know, some big energy companies because of things that they see in their house, right? So there's certain brands we associate with certain things. I always said when I first came across Schneider, it's like the biggest energy company I hadn't heard of, because you're everywhere, but perhaps maybe in places people don't know, in cupboards and in circuit breakers, things like that. Is that fair?
So thank you for bringing that up, in fact, because yeah, it's fair. We rely on infrastructure and underlying infrastructure that sometimes are not well known, but that are actually fundamental. And probably we'll touch base on that. They are absolutely fundamental to, you know, to solve some of the biggest issues that we have today on our hand.
And lastly, Vincent, you're obviously French. Well, I'm guessing you're French anyway, but where are you based? Are you based in Paris or are you based somewhere else around the world?
I'm very surprised you could notice I am French.
Yeah. Mais oui.
I'm actually based out of Boston.
That's a brilliant link because I'm now heading over to another part of America. Jeannie Salo, say hello to the audience.
Hello. Happy to be here. My name is Jeannie Salo, and I'm the Vice President for Government Relations at Schneider Electric, based in Washington, D.C. My background is that I've been working in the world of government for my entire career. I started in the federal government. I worked for the State Department, actually, and I worked for two different senators working on foreign relations issues, including the climate agenda. And then I moved to the private sector, and I've been having a lot of fun ever since. I joined Schneider Electric 3 years ago. I'm here in Washington trying to build our brand recognition with key policymakers.
Yeah, I think the thing that I've always found is fascinating about energy is it's one of those things that it affects our lives fundamentally, right? No energy, there's no hospital, there's no banking, there's nothing, right? But it's also got a societal edge to it, fairness, allowing people to access things like this. We're here talking because of the power of energy to get us on the internet. But it also has that big driver, which you talk about, which is policy. Because governments around the world, you know, we're looking at all the stuff around climate change. they're making the decision. So, Ginny, you say you've done many years in government. We know what's happened in America recently, a little bit of turmoil, and you've come out on the other side. You've got a president who's really committed back to the sort of the general worldview on climate change. Is it now a time where you think policymakers are really intrinsically involved in this? Whereas before it was kind of let the sector get on with sorting things out.
I think we're all aligned that it's time to really focus on this. I mean, I really have sensed a significant shift in the United States on this issue. And it's not solely about, you know, coming to terms with the impact on the environment and what it's doing. We can see the impacts in our ports with storms, you know, the disruptions. The politics sometimes get in the way of progress here. But one thing is for sure, Americans want to be competitive in the world. And so when you talk about greener technologies and transforming the energy landscape, Americans on both sides of the aisle and policymakers on both sides of the aisle don't want the United States to be left behind on that massive shift.
Is it a particular problem that you're such a state-based society? So what California does, Texas won't do. Does it need a real kind of federal push to get a uniform energy policy?
I do think so. I think there are states that can lead and establish best practices, and that's good because it shows sometimes other states can learn from that. But there's definitely a role for federal policy, and that's happening. And in some cases, you know, there's federal preemption of state laws that can come in place of all, you know, but that takes time. Right now, we see a lot of leadership at the federal level because of the Biden administration, and they have decided that they will put climate at the center of every agency and they will be driving it. And there's a climate army in place. In fact, my job got a lot harder because now we have to get to know so many more people to try to engage with them on new and exciting priorities in all different spaces. But it's definitely happening at the federal level in the United States. There is a definite role for that federal leadership. And then there's the international leadership that needs to come out of the federal government as well, because there's no way that a single country can handle this problem. And there's no way that just the public sector can handle this problem. It's a public-private partnership, and it's an international issue.
So let's talk about internationalism. So Vincent, you and I were at COP. I saw you very briefly back in November, and COP had a lot of things. And I summed it up as a thing on my platform as a mix of hypocrisy and hope. I saw a lot of hypocrisy. I saw quite a bit of greenwashing, but I saw lots of hope. I met people from all around the world. I saw people working really hard. And whatever people say, we came out with deals. We came out with far more countries committing to try and do something around climate change. What was your take on COP, Vincent, when you were having conversations out there?
I actually asked myself extensively that question when flying back to Boston. So part of myself was like, yeah, okay, look, we made progress, right? I mean, we have to recognize that agreements on methane emissions, which frankly speaking is something that can and need to be solved. A big announcement regarding finance, right? And private investors and how they're going to manage finance going forward. A big commitment from India, which was not necessarily expected. I mean, after that, we can discuss about the timing and so on. But I mean, there was a big commitment. And as a matter of fact, you had like 31 countries, if I'm not mistaken, which have updated their commitments to 2050. So you had all this in the background, right? Kind of saying, okay, we make progress, it's still going on and so on. But then obviously, would that have happened 15 years ago? It probably would have been a success. It did happen in 2021, and that's certainly not enough, right? And I think everyone realized that. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion regarding coal, for sure, and the phase out, phase down conversation. There's been, I mean, one thing is clear. I mean, we've run the figures. By 2030, we want to be consistent with 1.5 degree pathway. We need to drop emissions from coal by 40%. By the way, that means zero emissions in OECD economies, right? Just to be clear. So it's not really where we're going. And then, you know, we got all those commitments, but we also still need to take them into concrete actions, which we have not seen so much of that yet. And then on top of that, even if we take all those commitments into account and we focus really on 2030, it's really where we can act. When you look really at the commitments to 2030, you make your calculations. We say, okay, look, emissions are going to drop by about 4 gigatons of emissions. If all the commitments are made, we should be at between minus 10 and minus 15, right? So this is a sad reality. So I had those two things, you know, banging in my head. And at the same time, I was really wondering, you know, but maybe we are not taking the problem from the right angle.
One of the people I actually bumped into at COP, well, I saw him with his cavalcade, was John Kerry. Now, obviously, he's the special envoy. I don't know if you've spoken to him, Jeannie, if you have got involved, but, you know, it was quite interesting that someone, a heavyweight like that, was there. And as I said, we've all got our views of how America has changed, pivoted, but there are many Americas. You know, there are many Americas and there are many lobbies in America. What has been your kind of take on how things are from the US perspective, particularly, especially the US-China thing, which came out of the blue?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised at all, frankly. John Kerry, there's no way he was going to become the climate envoy and not leverage his experience as Secretary of State in the past. He knows how to talk to other leaders. And I know that his top priority would be to engage in diplomacy with other partners, including China. So without question, that was a pronounced goal of the climate envoy. So quickly to answer your first question, yes, we have spoken to Kerry and his team at Schneider Electric. One of our first objectives was to get to know that team as they came on board after the election. And we wanted them to understand our role at Schneider Electric in the fight and how we can contribute. And so we met and shared some of our analysis with that team and the way we think about the path to net zero, including the fact that we do need to make commitments and we do need these big events like COP and Climate Week, but we can't put it all around these culminating events. Let's all get ready to make our commitments. Every single day should be a commitment. Every single day should be an action day. And we have got to change our thinking around, let's all gear up to making some great announcement on a particular date so that we can get good media attention. We need to get into delivering on the commitments. Let's show the results. Let's not wait. Nothing should be pushed off until a single date so that we can make a difference. And our company was part of a roundtable with Secretary Kerry in trying to bring private sector to the table and think about how to leverage that. And it was something that our CEO did emphasize, is that deploy like technologies that are available now, tackle the easy to abate, keep pushing on future as well, but don't wait. Like, let's all get to work. We have technologies. We can do more. We should do more immediately.
Yeah, that is the thing. I'll be brutally honest. Anyone can say they're climate neutral tomorrow. Just offset it, right? And this year, we've reported on tons of companies saying, oh, yeah, we're committing to this, we're committing to that. When are we going to see the action then? So, you know, let's look at this, you know, the idea of, you know, one thing that I suppose people have always been obsessed about, you know, how do we cut our emissions? But there is an actual element of kind of cutting back what we're using, isn't there? And Vossel, that's one of the things I suppose that your kind of research institute looks at. What can you do to reduce energy demand now? And that could be a way that not just, you know, countries, but actually, as Jeannie said, individual businesses, and dare I say individuals like us, can start to do things.
The reason why we set up our Sustainability Research Institute in the first place was to really try to understand and get our own understanding and detailed and granular understanding about what's going on, right, on the climate change story, and what are the real ways to get there. There's a big finding we made. And in fact, you did allude to that earlier, you know, when you said energy, nobody knows about energy because energy is not a hospital, right, or it's not a car. And what you said is as obvious as it may seem, you know, what you said is absolutely fundamental, because one of the big findings that we made, you know, doing all this research is that actually, the current existing body of work doesn't take much stock of what's happening on the use side of energy. And so what's going on the way you use that energy is actually a fundamental part of the equation. And believe it or not, it's under-researched. Do you remember what you were doing in 1990, 30 years ago, you were using a fax machine, you barely had a cell phone and stuff like that, right? I mean, life has changed completely. Today we are remote, you know, we're not all together and still we're connected. I mean, life has completely transformed, and guess what? It's going to transform the same way, maybe even faster to 2050. And none of it has actually properly been integrated into the existing forecast. When we did this, right, the one thing that we actually realized was that all those new uses of energy, you know, stemming from innovations that are actually positive for people, right? They are not bad for people. They're improving living conditions, which is what everyone on Earth is striving for, right? But all those transformations, those innovations, as they materialize, you know, as the economy modernizes, they actually lead to lower carbon emissions. So we are not getting to a world which is where we say, okay, the more we develop, the worse it's going to get. I mean, there are things that are going to be not positive. They need to be watched out. Okay, bear with me. I'm being a bit high level here. But overall, as the economy modernizes, it decarbonizes. It's not decarbonizing nearly fast enough. That's very clear, right? But it's going into the right direction. So the whole question is actually, how do we accelerate the modernization of the economy? And if we do that well, then maybe the 1.5 trajectory, which seems so improbable and unlikely, especially following, the COP26 and so on, that might actually be more feasible than we think, right? It's a question of pace. It's a question of speed. It's not a question of destination.
I want to pick you up on that point. So let's look at Africa, right? In Africa, they're building mobile masts. Right, they're jumping the technology. They're not bothering with landlines. They're skipping. So is that what you're saying? So as we get new computers, the computers use less energy. As we get communication, it doesn't need as much infrastructure. Is that what you're trying to say, that how the technology will help us even as we advance? And that's the most important thing, is we take everyone on this planet with us. You believe the technology can actually do less harm than it did before?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. I want to bring an additional point, you know, for the debate on this. We are today about 8 billion people, right? 7.8 billion people globally. We're going to be closing toward 10 billion, 9.7, if we look at the detailed forecast from the UN, by 2050. So the question also, as we project far down the road to 2050, is what are those people going to be doing, you know, to the problem at hand? And that's, again, something that we tend to overlook when we make such kind of long-term projections. We need to stop with the pessimism, right? We need to understand that a lot's going on. A lot of innovations are happening. They are actually not bad for the planet, right? We need to scale them up more rapidly. That's probably our task as a generation, right? Right now, to do that. And then we have the next generations which are coming in, which have even more ideas.
And I suppose that's the thing, you know, Ginny, you look at what's happening, right? Old Sleepy Joe, poor Sleepy Joe, but he's got a lot of younger people there, right? He's putting some things. I saw his story about the government fleet is going to decarbonize, right? But it's not just about the governments taking action, is it? There is a grassroots of people taking action. What sort of are you getting from the American public particularly, and the younger people, as Vincent were talking about, who are the future and who really care? They really care about this sort of stuff.
Well, it is absolutely true that there are people that really care. It's even changing the Republican Party, and because the younger demographics are different and they care about climate and they're pivoting on this issue. There is a conservative climate caucus now. We are right now embarking on a generational, unprecedented investment in U.S. infrastructure to modernize, digitize, make that infrastructure more resilient to climate impacts, and to make it more sustainable. This is an incredible investment, and it's supposed to be generational. And so when we're talking about this government, it's not just, you know, we're going to electrify some buses. In theory, each state, each city is supposed to have their own climate strategy, resiliency strategy, and should be investing these funds as they flow down in ways that are generational. So we're talking to people, and there are groups, lots of groups, citizens groups, environmentalist groups, you know, all kinds of groups that are talking to these policymakers about how they invest the funds so that it's not the same old infrastructure, that it is something that will have a more positive impact on climate and that will pave the way for the next investment. And it may come from the private sector or it may come from future funding. But I give you an example. If you're going to electrify the bus fleet in a municipality, build a microgrid to power it. ensure that that community has resilient power in the face of the next storm. And it's cleaner. And it means that you have cleaner air for that community, which is usually an underserved, lower income population around a port. Everyone is trying to think of different ways of doing things as they invest these dollars. And I guarantee you the groups that care about climate are more active than ever before in the United States right now.
Can I ask a very simple question? Is it as simple as this? Where policy goes, money follows.
Sometimes. But listen, I mean, there are a lot of projects in the pipeline right now. And there are a lot of people who just want to do things the same old way because they've been waiting for a long time to get the money. So some things are just going to happen in the same old way, right? And what we need to do is encourage them to think differently. And we had a presentation to the governors at an infrastructure summit this past year. And the reality is, we said, you can't just move from shovel ready to shovel worthy. You have to move from shovel ready to CAD worthy. You need to think digitally about what you want to do. And if it's going to meet the needs of the future, the electrical demands of the future, you know, the power needs of the future in a world where we have scaled up EVs and where we have a different, more digitized supply chain, and things are completely different, a different world. Because in 5-10 years, as we undergo this revolution, it is going to be a very different world that requires different infrastructure. And so we have to think out ahead and plan those projects in a different way.
Yeah. Well, look, we're getting towards the end, and there's a couple of topics I want to cover before we go. And one of them is new technology. Now, Vonta, you looked at some of this stuff. I mean, people have been talking about fusion since I was a child. That's a long time ago. But we've heard of things like nanotechnologies. So do you see that there are going to be a whole plethora of new technologies that accelerate over the next 10 to 20 years?
I'm very passionate about energy history. I've been reading probably everything that's been written on the topic. And one thing that I realized is that probably the moment in history which has been the most, let's say, dramatic and fascinating in terms of innovation has been the end of the 19th century. You realize it or not, but everything that we rely on today, in terms of big processes, new products, and so on, has somehow been invented in the 19th century. And in the 20th century, we've brought the cost down by huge productivity gains. That's what happened. Now we are in the 21st century, and I'm looking at it, you know, looking at the progress of technologies, and I'm genuinely excited by what I see, and I'm under the impression we are entering a new era of accelerated innovation. So the short answer is yes. I think the main driver, because we're talking indeed about a lot of different things, I think the main driver, the big revolution, if you will, is digital technologies. Okay? Clearly, it's another Gutenberg, you know, like invention, which is completely transforming the landscape. More computing, you know, more access, more connectivity. It's completely transforming everything. And this is because of digital technologies that we're making some warp speed progress on nano and biotechnologies and new materials. And all those things will actually redefine completely the landscape on energy. Now, this being said, you know, when we look at those innovations, and again, we've been looking at that, you know, in details, we've actually published a scenario which try to clarify, you know, what are going to be those main transformations that we can expect to 2050. When we look at those, most of them, they will happen with existing technologies. Right. So, in fact, when you look at the decarbonization plan to 2050, and I mean, this is what we found. This is what others have found. As a matter of fact, 75 to 80% of the effort, it can be done with the technologies that we already have at hand. How's that for good news?
That is good news. So, before we go, is 1.5 degrees not really a pipe dream? Should we not think of all the negativity? Is it actually more in reach than we think? What's your take, Jeannie?
It better be in reach, but we need to do more work. I think we have a lot of work to do to scale what we have now. We need to be fighting even harder, and we need to be preparing for mitigation at the same time in case we can't hit that mark. And I would just say, everybody needs to go more deploying technologies we have available today, because it's exciting to talk about the next thing. And it's exciting to talk about what's to come. And we must continue to scale demand for that as well. But we're not deploying enough of what we have. And that's critical to get through the interim period.
Is that a job of a company like yours? You know, Schneider should be doing this. You should be doing it yourselves in-house, and you should be doing it for your customers.
Absolutely. We need to do it ourselves. Our customers are doing it with us. We need more happening everywhere. We need our public policy officials to look at their plans all over the world and think about what they can do differently and to encourage, incentivize more rapid adoption, create the incentives that make it more exciting to the private sector to scale and rapidly. And then it will just be about demand because people will want it. It will be convenient. It will be what they want. It will be their technology of their preferences. And the young people will be have gotten older and they will not accept anything else. You know, we just got to get the older populations adjusted to the new technology. And we can do that.
That's great. Vonton, what about you? Can we hit 1.5?
It's more feasible than we think. Okay. That's my message. What we need to do, and I fully align with behind what Jenny has just said. I mean, what we need to do is to modernize faster, right? That's the key. And the reality is we got the technology for that. We got already 75% or 80%. We can discuss the figures, but we got the technology for that already. Obviously, more will come, but we already can do that. And the question, the matter actually is the pace at which we modernize. Okay. If we do that business as usual, we're not going to be where we need to be in 30 years and even more so in 10 years. So it's really now that we need to roll up our sleeves. And frankly, for that, we need to disrupt the inertia in the system, right? I mean, is it normal that we continue to build things that we know are actually the old generation of stuff, right? Big question. And this is where, in fact, you know, we talked about the role of governments versus businesses and so on. Okay, businesses, they need to, first of all, they need to take their fate in their hand and, you know, drive the drumbeat and get things going and do the change, as you said earlier. Then governments, this is where they have a role to play, right? In disrupting that inertia, which in fact is what may, you know, make us all succeed or fail, depending on how it turns out. And building up the backbone, right, the infrastructure, is a fundamental way of accelerating adoption of innovation, which is why the all the investment, the generational investment that Jenny described, you know, which is happening in the US right now, is so important and in fact so promising and so long overdue, should I say.
In reality, if we have the will, we can do it.
This is really the time to make it happen. No time to shy. If I may say so.
Vincent, Jeannie, thank you so much. I think, you know, it's been a great conversation. I think, you know, there's plenty of other things we can explore, but I hope you've enjoyed listening to Beyond the Scope. It's been a great step into where we can go. And I suppose the takeaway is that, you know, let's get on with it, which I think is a message that we can all do. Thanks very much for listening.
This has been Beyond the Scope, a sustainability podcast brought to you by Schneider Electric and supported by its Sustainability Research Institute. If you liked this episode, you can listen, subscribe, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts for more. The content of this podcast is for information purposes only and should not be undertaken as financial, economic, legal, business, tax, or investment advice. The information, statements, views, and opinions should not be construed as the provision of advice by Schneider Electric or as an offer to buy or sell any products or services or to make or consider any investment or course of action.